The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 525. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. This episode is part of the monthly series called The State of Pro Wrestling, where I and Gerald Glassford, the man behind the pop culture cosmos, we sit down and talk about all of the news that's happening in the world of professional wrestling. And so for this episode, we're going to talk about, of course, the big news that came out of the WWE just a few days ago, all of the releases that happened, as well as some of the call-ups from NXT. So after we discuss that, we'll talk about Danhausen and how things are going with him in the WWE. We'll also talk a little bit about Tony Khan's poor decision-making, and wrap things up with a conversation about commercialism in wrestling, and is it a bad thing or is it a good thing? All that and more coming at you right after I take care of this quick thank you to one of the great sponsors of this podcast. And that sponsor that I'd like to highlight is Courtney 614 Deals. If you need great deals on women's fashion, health and beauty, and a myriad of other products, look no further than Courtney 614 Deals. You can find her at all the major reselling sites like Whatnot, eBay, Poshmark, etc. Simply look for Courtney, C-O-R-T-N-E-Y is how it's spelled, 614 Deals. And if you purchase anything from her, please let her know that you heard about her endeavors from right here on the PVD Cast. Well, with that out of the way, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Gerald Glassford talking about the state of pro wrestling.
And we're back with another episode of The State of Pro Wrestling. We want Kyrie. 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 It's Gerald Glassford coming right back at you here for the Pop Culture Cosmos, Inside Sports Fantasy Football, the Lakers Fast Break, Lakers Latest, and The State of Pro Wrestling. Great to have you here. Make sure you like and subscribe while you're here on YouTube. And if you're listening to this on any audio podcast outlet, make sure you go ahead and give us that 5-star review on the PVD Cast, or also as well, of course, for the Pop Culture Cosmos as well. Make sure you go ahead and like and subscribe and do all the good things. And if you can support us any which way you can, it is sincerely appreciated. But it wouldn't be a state of pro wrestling without my tag team partner, Deluxe Indeed. He was not recently laid off by the WWE. He might be part of the NXT call-ups. We'll have to wait and see. It is, of course, the man behind so much in regards to Matt Talk, about Matlock, about the inner workings and inner details of the Matlock TV series, plus also as well, of course, his critically acclaimed show, the PVD Cast. Indeed, it is my good friend. It is John Orlando. What's up, man?
Gerald, thank you for that introduction. There's lots of things going on. I mean, we got a lot to talk about, and I'm very excited to talk about those topics tonight. And, I know you were at WrestleMania, so I want to get your experience. How was your experience there at the show?
Well, I said this to TJ the other day as well, my co-host on the Friday show. I enjoyed my time. I know I went on Saturday. I know Sunday was the better day. You can tell me all day long Sunday is the better day. And you know, on an aesthetic standpoint, you're right, absolutely. But two things. A, my daughter saw her favorite wrestler win in Liv Morgan winning the world championship. So it is absolutely a huge win for me. B, when you're watching from the 400 section at Allegiant Stadium and everything looks like a tiny ant, and most of the time you just end up looking at the marquee right above the ring, which actually had it was just a huge display of what was going on inside the ring, you get a different perspective, my friend. So maybe you're not as critical of what was going on.
Okay. All right.
And I had a lot of fun. Good fun. It was great to interact. Everybody seemed to be there, even if you're cheering against for someone else or Pat McAfee. Yeah, there were some Pat McAfee fans out there. I had to just like, okay, all right, whatever. Punter! But anyways, it was fine. It was good. It was great. I had a lot of fun. I know, again, Sunday was better, but being in there, it was. If they want to tell you 50,000 people, that's fine. I understand that they are smoking dope, as they always do each and every year when they do those crowd numbers. That's fine. And amuse yourself. But I was there. I've been there for several Raider games. I've been there for UNLV football games and concerts as well. It is not 50,000 people. 50,000 people were not in that side of that stadium. But okay, you just can keep on convincing yourself going forward. Again, how many people were in Detroit? 93,000 people, you know. Okay. All right, my friend. Those numbers will always keep on rising. So by 10 years from now, 90,000 people will have been in that stadium the day I was. So I'll just leave it at that. But I love the theatrics. I was sitting on the side, as I showed you a picture of.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely just was a lot of fun to see. I didn't get to see inside Gorilla because they had that enclosed, but you got to see some of the entrances before they went out on stage. And yeah, it just was a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to be interacting with so many like-minded people. It was to the point where, as I said this before on the air, if you didn't have a wrestling shirt, you felt embarrassed. So you went and bought a $50 wrestling shirt, went to the bathroom, because I went to wash my hands in the bathroom, and I see people just changing their shirts to a wrestling shirt just so that they could go ahead and have something, because they didn't want to feel so out of place, because everybody had WWE merchandising, which, again, however much you want to poo-poo on the crowd size and all that, this will be one of the biggest money-making weekends for the company in history. And we're going to go why into more detail here in a little bit. One of the reasons why. But yes, for me, it was just a lot of fun. I got to visit the store at the Las Vegas Convention Center right next to World on both Friday and as they were closing on Sunday. And it was just a great experience. Overall, it was just a fun experience. Again, I had fun interacting with the people last year. I had even more fun this time actually going to the event and experiencing it with my daughter, who was just so happy. And just the elation on her face said it all for me. That did it all. No matter how bad at times and boring at times the wrestling on Saturday was, I'll be quite honest with you.
Okay. Well, that's good, though, that you enjoyed yourself, because that's what it's all about. I know we're going to talk about maybe what might try to supersede having fun and whatnot later on in the show. But I was glad that you got to go, because I was hoping that you did get a chance to go. And the fact that your daughter got to go and you have that moment, that moment of bonding over wrestling, that's what it's all about.
Well, thank you. Yeah, absolutely. She's gotten into it hardcore in the past year. No pushing or egging on from me. I didn't even know she was doing it, because she a year ago she'd be like, isn't that stuff fake, and then I tried to explain it to her a little bit that time, and then she said oh, and then she did more investigating, and then she found someone she could connect with. That's what happens when people tell you about the first time they really start to enjoy pro wrestling. It's because they don't may not get the fact whether it's worked or whether it's real, but they connect with someone or someones while doing it. That's what really connects with them. And her first memories of pro wrestling, even though she's in her 20s now, will be of her connecting with Liv Morgan and then ultimately going to see her live and winning a world championship. So I'm really happy for her. And again, if you guys have any questions out there on WrestleMania, the experience, the fact that Seth Rollins, I don't think they love the song. They don't love Seth. I'll just leave it at that. You know, that I mean, you want to kill a crowd, have Seth Rollins be out there. But there was actually more than just him that killed the crowd out there. There were several matches that kind of underwhelmed the audience. I'll just leave it at that. And that main event, yeah, it is what it is. And they went hardcore with the punt and all that and all that. But yes, you know, with a broken orbital bone for Cody Rhodes. But again, overall, a good time was had by me and my daughter on Saturday.
Well, there you go. That's all you could ask for.
Yes, indeed, my friend. So what were your thoughts watching the entire weekend? Now, Sunday, I would agree with you. Sunday was much better. The first hour, obviously, for ESPN was really a highlight with Obafemi and then Penta. Obafemi beating Brock Lesnar, who is supposedly retired. Yeah, Terry Funk retirement, I see out of that one. And then also as well, Penta winning the ladder match. But there was a lot of good stuff on the Sunday card. Your thoughts, my friend, overall though, on WrestleMania weekend?
I felt that this weekend, or that weekend I should say, was really good. Yes, Saturday there were some stinkers. Yes, there was, but overall I thought that the matches on Saturday were good. You know, I think the main event could have been handled a little bit different, and I know that we've talked about the booking and how things got thrown together a few weeks prior to Mania. But I think Saturday was good. Sunday was really good. That definitely, I agree. The main event was fantastic. I mean, Reigns and Punk gave everything that they had, and it put on a great performance. So for me, I think overall, I really liked WrestleMania this year. I can't complain. My biggest complaint, and it's not even the matches I thought were stinky. Like that, the women's tag team turmoil match was not very good. But those are very infrequently, frequently they're not very good, I should say. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's the men, whether it's the women, you just got too many moving parts and too many things can go wrong. But for me, the biggest thing is what we're going to talk about here later on is just the large amount of commercials and dead time that, you know, entrances and that were super long. And it just was like, man, can't we cut some of this out?
Well, it provided good time for me to go to the bathroom or, you know, to go get a refill because I wanted to get my money's worth because they had a collector's cup that you could keep, but with free refills. So yeah, during those long 10, 15 minute walkouts to the ring, I could go ahead and get refill, go to the restroom, you know, see what was going on. I almost was tempted just as a gag to go ahead and get that $142 tomahawk steak that they were offering with the WrestleMania branding on the bone, but I was talked out of it, so I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, you're right. To be in all seriousness, it was just too long. Too many commercials, too many recaps, too much time spent as far as the presentation is concerned. I get it. I understand it. I'm not going to sit here and tell you different because there are stats to back up just how bad, especially night one, was in that respect. But when it comes to the commercialism and of course the Slim Jim tables and the ring covered in ads and whatnot, I'm just going to ask you this. We're going to go into our thoughts now on the commercialism. Now, is commercialism in pro wrestling a bad thing? And I'm just going to say this, John. I can remember back in WCW when they went through their ruse days. Do you remember the ruse?
I do. I remember ruse.
Okay. Do you remember how much uproar there was about people? Oh my gosh, it says ruse on the side of the ring, on the ring post there. They've got a covered sign with ruse on the... Yeah, ruse were shoes, by the way, that nobody bought. So there you go. Do you think where they're advertising on WCW? That won't sell a shoe for sure. But again, I do want to say this. Okay, I'm not exactly endorsing TKO's commercialization of everything and the fact that they're now treating everything on a corporation, especially when they just laid off talent and their execs got tens of millions of dollars in salaries and bonuses announced as far as it's concerned. I'm just going to say this. If you give an opportunity to some of those promoters from the past, some of those guys from the past that own companies from before, if they were given to live in this time frame and own a company like the WWE, would you not think they would go those same routes as mm-hmm. it? Because, you know, as you and I both know, have been watching and understanding the wrestling industry for decades. You understand, especially in those 80s days, in the Carney days, in the days that, you know, as far as the good old days that everybody romanticized about, including us sometimes, that those promoters were greedy. Those promoters, at times, they held with funds. They withheld funds from talent. They disguised things, you know, to the public. It's just, you know, again, I'm not going to say one in particular, but if a certain promoter from that era in the 80s, the 90s, the 70s would have gotten that same opportunity, would you not have thought that they would go about something similar with the commercialism of pro wrestling?
Well, I think commercialization with pro wrestling has been going on, just as you said, since the beginning of pro wrestling. I mean, whether you're talking about, you know, promoters holding back money, claiming that the draw wasn't that big, and pocketing that extra cash, or whether you're talking about local sponsors. I mean, I can remember, you know, that USWA in Memphis used to have like a car dealership on the apron, and they had the chewing tobacco on the ring mat back in the late 80s. Yeah, I don't think it's bad, Gerald. I think much like many, many things in our lives, moderation is the key. And I feel like right now TKO has no, there's no moderation. We are going to make.
Oh, no, profit. No, there is no moderation. I will be 100% with you on that, my friend.
Yeah. So I just feel like, yes, it's always been around. And yes, Jerry Jarrett or Eddie Graham or Bill Watts, if given the opportunity to do what the WWE and TKO is doing right now, they would have jumped at the chance, the opportunity to make money, the opportunity to grow and prosper with your territory. I think without a shadow of a doubt that they would definitely say, yeah, this is let's do it.
JSJ said, how was Brock's retirement sadder than Cena's? Because Cena's was a year. And even then with Cena's, I'm not 100% sold on that. I'm still thinking Terry Funk when I see John Cena and when I see Brock Lesnar, because Saudi Arabia is around the corner, and Saudi Arabia usually spends enough money. When they want something, they get something. Indeed. But
John was at WrestleMania, so he's not even retired.
but he wasn't performing as a wrestler per se.
That's true. But still, I said, like, okay, we can't miss you if you never go away, John. We just can't. You know, that's the old adage. So I was surprised.
You'll see him next year. You'll see him in something similar next year, maybe doing something like a five knuckle shuffle or something like that. I'd have to, if the Saudi Arabia WrestleMania goes by and there's no big comebacks for AJ Styles, Brock Lesnar, John Cena, or whoever Gunther retires next, then I'll believe it. But I just have a hard time coming to grips that, you know, if Saudi wants someone, they won't get someone. They will spend money on The Rock. They will spend money on John Cena. They will spend money on Brock Lesnar. They will spend money on any one of those guys that they want to come back if they so choose.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah, I agreed indeed, my friend. But it is, of course, the state of pro wrestling. It is John Orlando from the PVD cast, along with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks again for watching, listening. So with that, as far as the commercialization of pro wrestling, I told you, John, and I thought I'm not sure if I showed you pictures from the store on the Friday of WrestleMania and the Sunday of, well, actually, it was the Monday of WrestleMania. I'm going to correct myself. It's the Friday of WrestleMania and the Monday after WrestleMania is when I went to the Las Vegas Convention Center and saw firsthand, you know, the WWE World, and also as well the WWE Store. By the way, if anybody spent money on WWE World, okay, there's a lot of commercialization right there you probably didn't need, because I could see the whole exhibit from the store, and I would say I would never pay $50 for that. You would pay me $50 for what I saw, indeed. Plus, I saw video tours and all that. But the store was really a lot of fun, because it had a huge amount of selection on shirts everywhere, the paraphernalia, and things like that. But one of the biggest sellers out of it, as was reported coming out of it, but I could have told you that, and I think I did tell you and TJ and others that during the weekend, was Danhausen. Danhausen was an incredible draw, my friend. And since his debut in Chicago at Elimination Chamber, it's been to older people, an older generation, a very much of mixed bag. And I'll say that for sure, because a lot of people our age are just not getting it. They don't understand the skits. They don't understand why he's there. They don't understand what he's doing. And they're just leaving that. But if you go on the ground and you go to WrestleMania or you go to an event, you see kids after kids after kids after kids, groups of kids with the face paint on of Danhausen. You see families buying tons of Danhausen stuff. I'm going to give you an example. I'm not sure. If I didn't send it to you, I'll send it to you later on, my friend. I'll send you an area where they were selling. They had a complete section of where the plushies were at, the $60 plushie dolls. Okay? They're just dolls. They're dolls, but they're like soft, and they're like a little bit larger than of course the, you know, the action dolls and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But they're plushie dolls. They're $60. Now keep that in mind. And they had a huge area where each rack, it was like a clear thing, and then it leads into a bin. Almost like they threw a whole bunch of plushies into a tube, and then it comes out and you get it on the other side, as far as I'm concerned. But you filled it up with plushies, various plushies in each one. And each one had a row. There was CM Punk plushies, Roman Reigns plushies, for all the major characters, and Danhausen. Danhausen's one was empty. His tube was empty. You want to know why? On Friday. Sold out. He sold out on the first day. His plushie at $60 a pop sold out. Because it's being sold to kids. It's being sold to families. It's being sold to younger audiences. And I don't think that, you know, people like us, our age, they don't get it. So I want to hear your thoughts on Danhausen, because he has been a massive success. Fanatics were the people, the reports are that the execs at Fanatics, and I saw the Fanatics people there, they were trying to figure out what they could do to get more Danhausen stuff in there. They were all befuddled by the intense amount of sales that Danhausen was getting. Your thoughts on Danhausen, because this is going to lead us into our next conversation on Tony Khan.
Danhausen is fantastic. I have been a fan of Danhausen even when he was in the indies, even when he was on AEW. The gimmick is so darn silly, but it works. It works because he's giving everything he's got to that character. You know, I've heard interviews with him where he talked about that, you know, he had gone through various different concepts for his character, and this was kind of the last straw for him, and he created Danhausen and it took off. I think his spot on Sunday night, I thought, was awesome. It was hilarious. I mean, it's not going to be for the fans that want to see, you know, Bryan Danielson type matches. That's not what you're going to get with Danhausen. You're going to get the comedy. And there's nothing wrong with that, because we've seen for nearly how long, 20, 25 years, that R-Truth has stuck around and has been the comedy foil for many heels. There's no reason why Danhausen can't do that either. While his original appearance in Chicago was a little bit rough, things have really kind of turned itself around, and definitely he is definitely deserving of being as successful as he is right now with the WWE. And luckily, I feel like the WWE hasn't tried to force him to do different things that he's not comfortable with. And I think that that helps out too, obviously.
I'm just going to say with Dan Helms, I sent the pictures. I apologize for not sending it to you that day. I sent it to TJ Johnson, my Friday host, but I thought I sent it to you, but I sent it to someone else instead as well. I apologize. But if you see on your Facebook there, you're going to see the plushie. That's the CM Punk plushie that I showed you, but also the area, the huge area dedicated at the WWE store to the plushies itself. And all of those, that picture you see of all those empty rows was Monday, just before they closed. So they had sold so many of those plushies from everyone, from CM Punk, Roman Reigns, Tiffany Stratton, other names that are out there, whoever was on the plushies. I forget all the names that are on plushies, but again, all those were gone. See, all those were filled on Friday when I was there, sans one, and that was Danhausen. So Danhausen was already sold out on those plushies, and they're $60 a pop. The t-shirts, I saw people leaving with the shorts, they're leaving with the paraphernalia. I saw people holding racks of clothes, piles of clothes, heading to the checkout market of Danhausen stuff. It is unbelievable. And the thing I said to myself at that time, John, Tony Khan is so stupid. Tony Khan is so stupid. This, all these, he had them for a year and a half, I believe. He had them
longer. I think it was, I think he had a 3-year deal, because I think the first year he was on TV. And then I think midway through that second year is when he got ghosted. I'm pretty sure that he had a 3-year deal, but won't be 100% on that.
He had them for multiple years, John, yeah, and did nothing to figure out what to unlock Danhausen to the audience. Did absolutely nothing for this guy. And he had such an endearing character, but someone at WWE, who we always criticize, and rightly so, for the way they book, for the way they write storylines, for this and that, whoever was the genius to put Danhausen in these type of situations, starting with that Adam Pearce skit on Monday Night Raw, the day after the failed entrance of Elimination Chamber, which now lives in hysteria forever. As far as that's concerned, because now the WWE is laughing at it. I know Dave Meltzer compared it to the gobbledygooker. Well, who's the gobbledygooker now, Dave? I'm sorry, because he's made them millions of dollars. And Michael Dodge says, my students are big fans of Danhausen. Absolutely, because he is not for us, John. He is not meant for us. He has been marketed in the right way to the right audience, and he's not in the ring very much. When he does, he gets the goofy, cheesy wins. It's marketed towards kids, and for every Jim Cornette or Dave Meltzer that doesn't get it and whatnot, it doesn't matter what they think. He is garnering millions for WWE, and I'm happy for him because a great percentage of that is going to a guy that toiled on the indies for years, was just basically put to the side as a novelty act, and like you said, ghosted by Tony Khan. Now he is getting his curse lifted, John.
And look, I'm also going to say something as well, that they've done a great job of taking The Miz and making him the foil to Danhausen, because let's be honest, I have Ringside Rand, who appears on my shows, and he thinks, and he's right to an extent, that The Miz is like the MVP, the unsung MVP of WWE. Because when you need someone to put somebody over, who do they go to? They go to The Miz. And The Miz always seems to get them over without damaging their character. And so, I mean, this whole Miz versus Danhausen, the whole video they had I think on SmackDown, I think it was, the one where Danhausen was in his house, where he got to Miz's house. That was funny. That made me chuckle. That made me laugh. And I know that, as you did say, I'm not the target audience. Neither are you. But still, it's something fun that we both can enjoy no matter how old you are, whether you're a kid, whether you're a teenager, whether you're an adult. I think that it's the silly comedy that certainly gets over.
Absolutely. So again, we're talking as far as how well he has been perceived, and I'm happy for him and more right now. So if, again, if you have any thoughts down below, Michael, again, this is going, as Michael said, this is going to a younger audience. And these are the Danhausen skits, the Danhausen presence. We talk about, again, the first time as my daughter in her 20, when she, her first inferences of pro wrestling has been Liv Morgan is the first thing that she's identifying with. These are the first things that these younger audiences are going to identify with is Danhausen. And is it the true, the true worker of the sport, the true representation of the sport? For many people, no, it will not be, because they want, you know, people to identify first with that great worker or that amazing presence that's out there. Well, sometimes it's about just entertaining people, because that's what I thought that what this business is supposed to do, entertain. And if Danhausen entertains, more power to you, my friend.
Yeah, George the Animal Steel, not a great worker, but a great character. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Just real quickly, I just do want to throw one thing out there, though. Just a little bit of history. If I remember correctly, I believe Danhausen debuted the new Danhausen character at that time. I think he debuted it here in Ohio, in Cleveland, I think at an indie show, if I'm not mistaken. That's where the first time anyone saw the Danhausen character.
Were you referee then?
No, I was not refereeing, nor ring announcing.
That would have been great, because that would have been a claim to fame, and then you could have gone to Danhausen and said, "Where are your human dollars?"
Something. And like I want my blimp.
Yeah, there you go. Well, he got his blimp.
He did. He did at WrestleMania.
Yes, he did his WrestleMania, and he even got to be in the Goodyear blimp up above that was hovering above WrestleMania. So again, I have nothing but the biggest world of happiness to Danhausen on his success. But again, that is one of the two big blunders. And I know that we're hard on AEW, so we're not trying to hate on AEW. Again, a very successful company. It is the number two business in the entire world, although CMLL, AAA, and then some stuff going on over in Japan as far as what's going on there. New Japan, okay, comes and goes right there. But AEW, for all lack of a better term, is the number two promotion in the entire world. I will probably have to go ahead and say that right now, but I'm not trying to go ahead and slam Tony Khan. But when you also, as we talked about last month, John, we thought for All In, their big event of the year in London, it's going to be MJF and Will Ospreay. I will still tell you it's going to be MJF and Will Ospreay. But since we have had our last chat, Will Ospreay has lost in a PLE, and MJF lost his title on free TV in 4 or 5 minutes in basically a squash match after beating Kenny Omega, after beating Strickland, after beating so many of the top stars. He loses to a guy that's weighs 30 pounds less than me. And the fact is, if you saw that match, MJF had to roll, tuck and roll in four different directions just to try and make sure the coffin drop would hit right. And it looks so bad. It looks so phony. It looks so terrible because of the fact you willingly have to roll yourself a matter of 5-6 feet in the other direction so he could hit you from all four corners. Your thoughts on that, my friend? Again, credit to Darby Allin for, you know, working so hard and getting this title. Whether you want to say it's a Mick Foley appreciation title, which Mick Foley eventually overcame and earned by winning it multiple times and earning it because he proved himself to be a ratings draw and a money draw as well, despite all the sacrifices he's made. And then a combination of Rey Mysterio, who at a smaller size still brought in people with his electrifying skill. I understand that people have been talking about that comparison to both those wrestlers, my friend. But your thoughts on giving the title to Darby Allin. I'm not as far as against that part of it as much as I am the timing of it and the fact that the match itself was absolutely abysmal after what MJF proved against some of the elite performers in All Elite Wrestling.
I feel like I don't have a problem. Let me go back and just say I don't have a problem with Darby Allin being the champion. Okay, that's fine. No problem. He's one of the pillars. I get it. Mm-hmm. But there was zero build for this.
They did it during the show. They did nice packages during the show and interviews to build up, but that's during the show.
Yeah, that's my point. Like, there's been no build. So how do you expect casual new fans to really give a hoot about Darby Allin when there's been no build or even this match? Like, that's the thing that baffles me. And every time we talk about this, and again, I'll admit to the same thing that Gerald admits. Yes, I'm critical of AEW. Yes, it seems that we do this every single time we tape a State of Pro Wrestling, that we have something to talk about in terms of the absolute debacle that AEW seems to be. I want it to be successful. I want it to be successful. I want people, the boys, the gentlemen and the ladies, the boys and girls, whatever you want to say, the wrestlers of today, especially those at the independent level, need somewhere to wrestle and need a bigger stage to wrestle. And AEW can be that stage. But again, just with the terrible decisions of Tony Khan, time in and time out, I don't understand. I don't understand what he's thinking. I don't, because there's no checks and balances, which is problem number one. Whatever Tony decides, that's what happens. There's no one to pull him aside and say, hey, look, you really think we should do X, Y, and Z? How about we do X and Y and we hold off on Z? There's no delegation. You know, we hear about how he's always rewriting and writing and writing stuff. There's no delegation. No, here, you go do this. All right. There's none of that. I mean, I think that's the problem right there in a nutshell, is that there's no one checking Tony Khan's ideas. There's no checks and balances whatsoever. And again, great for Darby Allin, but if you're going to do this, and you're going to do it on free television too, which that's a problem in my book. Why was this not done at a major show, at a major PLE or whatever, just on a regular old Dynamite? We're going to have this match. We're going to hype it throughout the show. That's just cheap. That's lame. That's all I could say. I mean, I know I rambled a little bit there, but it's mind-blowing that we're doing this now how many years and we still are having the same conversation time and time again about AEW.
And again, to me, I thought the way it was done was very egregious. And again, MJF to do this must have been very willing to do this. And he wasn't going off to do a film project or anything like that, which was immediately expounded upon. The fact that it looks so phony and it looks so bad by the fact that he had to roll in a certain direction 6 feet just so that make sure that he was angled correctly for the coffin drop in all four corners. And it was done in 4 or 5 minutes. It's just absolutely atrocious because you build this guy up as the guy that's supposed to be the face of your company. It's supposed to be the guy that's promoting your company. It's supposed to be the guy that's the best part of your company. You have him beat guys like Swerve Strickland, Bandido, Hangman Adam Page. You have him beat guys in the past like Samoa Joe. You have him beat guys like Brody King. You know, and you beat them in Kenny Omega in hard fought long matches. Then to have a guy like Darby Allin, who is 180 pounds soaking wet, and you have him get destroyed by him, squashed by him in such a small amount of time. It's disappointing. It's not okay. I understand it was his hometown and you want to do some things that the WWE doesn't do, because the WWE is known to make the wrestlers home in the hometown lose for the most part, outside of what we saw with Roxanne Perez in Laredo, Texas the other day. You know, it most of the time, in fact, Vince McMahon would go out of his way to make sure if that was your hometown, you would lose in your hometown. I mean, this was the unwritten rule that was there. I get that. I understand that. But still, just the foresight, because the fact is you also, on the other end, Will Ospreay, who could be the next face of your company, you have him lose as well earlier in the month. So I don't know in the direction that they're going. I think it still will lead back to MJF versus Will Ospreay, my friend. But it is truly disappointing that they're going about doing it the way they're doing it. I don't mind Darby Allin winning the world title at some point if you want to really reward a person for putting his life on the line on several occasions. I get that. I understand that. But find a better way and more sensible way of doing it at a certain specific time.
I mean, I would have booked that out for 3 months. That would have been 3 months of my programming, my main storyline if I was in charge. Three months to really build and get people invested in this match, highlighting, you're right, Darby's smaller, but highlighting that Rey Mysterio, like pit bull underdog, you know, kind of storyline, and do have MJF doing all the heinous stuff that he can do to mess over, to screw over Darby in every single match that he has. And by that third month, you have something that people really can get behind. You know, they're going to really hate MJF for what he does. All right. They're going to be behind a Darby because of his underdog character, if you will. Not just doing it one night and having the build and the match. And of course, having it, as you said, go short. And I have to be honest, I didn't see any clips. I did not watch the episode. So I'm going to go with what you said, Gerald, that if it looked silly and ridiculous,
take a look at the match. Okay. When you get a chance, please take a look at the match. Okay. At least the ending, the highlights on YouTube. Just take a look at the highlights of how it happened, and you're just you're shaking your head. I shook my head. I'm going to be honest with you. I was very disappointed the way, because MJF, you and I have thought or universally agreed that MJF is the best thing about AEW. Mm-hmm. And first of all, it's very gracious of him to want to say, yes, okay, I'll lose to Darby Allin, because I have a feeling he has enough stroke to say, if John, if you or Tony Khan say, hey, MJF, I want you to lose to Darby Allin in his hometown on Wednesday. And they announced it on the PLE, but I want to make sure to let you know that I want you to lose to Darby Allin Wednesday. He could have said no. He has enough stroke to say no. I'm sure he has enough stroke to say no, but he chose to do it. And I gave him credit for doing that. I understand that. But if I was him, I would have said, why is this happening? Is it just because of his hometown? You just want the little pop. You want the something to talk about before WrestleMania. You want to try and steal a little bit of their thunder, which it didn't.
No.
Let's just put it, it didn't. But, you know, it just is, you know, if we want to go ahead and do that as some type of shock deal, yeah, that's fine. We're going to go ahead and do it. And then he had a tremendous match with Tommaso Ciampa the next week as far as defending the title. And I'm sure he'll have more great matches as well. And I'm not demeaning Darby Allin, the wrestler, because as a worker to provide good matches, he can and does quite often do just that. But the timing of it, when you're trying to have that build towards something really special in London with MJF versus Will Ospreay. Now, I'm assuming it will still go to that, John, but it's kind of tainted by what's happened with Will Ospreay and him losing. And I'm sure he's going to go on a run now, but MJF as well. I just think it just takes a little bit of the luster of what's coming up for London.
Oh, I agree with you, but I also, it wouldn't shock me if we just threw everything out and just started with something else as our main event.
That would be crazy. For Wembley. That would be absolutely crazy. That would be a mistake. That's your biggest money match is right there with Will Ospreay and MJF. And okay. All right.
I don't want to see that happen, but we have evidence that Tony Khan could just decide one day to get up and go, we're going to go in a totally different direction for Wembley.
We'll see what happens, but I can't say I disagree with you on that. But we'll keep reporting it right here on the State of Pro Wrestling, and hopefully you'll join us for that this time next month. But before we head on out, my friend, let's go ahead and get into the juicy details of what went on as far as the folks who were unceremoniously and just a terrible time of year after WrestleMania when they do WWE does their annual cuts of talent, but also the NXT call-ups for one individual or one tag team's rise and hopes of getting to the big time. This is what they work for. This is what they earn for. For others, it's a sad time because they're let go from the thing that they love doing and the position that they were in with the biggest company in the entire world. So with that, John, do you want to go NXT call-ups first or WWE waivers first?
Let's go waivers because I think the waivers to me are a little bit more interesting than the NXT folks being called up.
That's exactly was my theme for the NXT call-ups because, yeah, when you look at that list, you're like saying to yourself, does anyone really stand out on that list? But I'll go from there. We'll start with the releases. We'll touch on the most impactful worldwide on a social media basis here at last. We'll start with the NXT and developmental releases. Andre Chase, founder of Chase U, Dante Chen, the first Singaporean-born WWE superstar, Tyra Mae Steele, Serena Linton, Tyson DuPont, Tyreek Igwe, Chris Island, Malik Blade, Trill London, Luca Crucifino, and Carly Bright were talents that were let go of the NXT level. The tag teams and factions, the entire Wyatt Six, gone. And I want to ask your thoughts on that, my friend, because they came in with a huge bang. Quite literally, if you were, of course, watching on the way that they entered in, you know, holes in the head and everything of Chad Gable and all that. And they left out with a whimper. Storytelling issues or whatnot, I don't know. Because, again, during Halloween, when Universal was promoting their haunted house, WWE didn't promote it along with them. So that could probably tell you that they were souring on the Wyatt Six already.
Yeah, I don't know what the problem was with the Wyatt Six. I was not a big fan of it. I liked Bray Wyatt, but just to me, the Bray Wyatt family was Rowan and Brody, and, along with Bray Wyatt. I didn't really like this new revision of it, but it seemed like there were so many starts and stops that I got to be honest, I wasn't 100% shocked that they got released, to be honest, because so many starts and stops, you know, along the way. You think that they were going to do something great in the tag division. They had the tag belts, correct, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, they did for a time. And then the Samoans, you know, they took it. But did anybody really care about that feud?
No. Right. The booking of the Wyatt Six was also something that left a lot to be desired. Yeah. Those guys. Tama Tonga's crew. But yeah, so I wasn't too surprised. Sorry.
No, all good. I wasn't too surprised at all. I mean, again, when you are on that mid to lower card and you're just not generating money, enthusiasm in the crowd, money at the merchandising sales, then you might want to make your travel plans accordingly. Just to be honest with you, I'm not going to try and BS anyone out there. But Motor City Machine Guns, they had last appeared actually at the WWE World. They performed in the ring just before WrestleMania. They were World Tag Team Champions upon almost initially upon their immediate entrance in there. They're longtime wrestlers, longtime tag team. I think their place next, according to rumors, is AEW. Not too surprised there with Motor City Machine Guns. They just didn't do much with them after they had their title run. And I mean, they're just veteran guys. They've just veteran guys that have earned their keep throughout the way. Really good workers. And I'm still thinking, you know, they're in their 40s now, that there's still more yet to come.
Oh, yeah. I think the MCMGs are not finished by any stretch of the imagination. And you know what? I also was not, again, surprised by this either, because I hadn't seen them on TV in a while. I hadn't heard anything about them in a while. So I just kind of assumed that, as you mentioned, they were kind of in that lower mid card that makes it a little bit of a difficult place to be in the world of WWE.
Next comes Alba Fire, part of the Secret Hervis. And that'll tell you right there that, you know, with one member of the Hervis out, Piper Niven, with Chelsea Green. And, you know, with all the stuff we've said in the past about Chelsea Green and as far as, you know, her not getting to where she needed to, or she should be, the, what the company actually thinks of her, I think that tells you all you need to know as far as that's concerned. If you're the bodyguard of person that they're not trying to push too heavily, that tells you right there that your days are not your days are numbered for unfortunately for her. Although Alba Fire, I think she has a great career ahead of her as well. Zoe Stark, she got cleared just before she got cut. Very great athlete, I believe, even despite the injuries that she's had, and injuries have derailed her career quite a bit, but I think Zoe Stark still has a place to go as far as it's concerned. And I think she can find her way with her great athleticism to go ahead and have some good matches in other places.
And I think both of those young ladies, there's been the whispers, the rumors that AEW might be a good place for them. Again, provided that, as we just talked about a few moments ago, provided that AEW doesn't drop the ball with them, that could be a nice place to fit. But still, not 100% shocked by any of those releases. In fact, I don't know, Gerald, were you shocked by any of the releases?
One, and we'll mention that here in a second. There's okay. One. We'll mention okay. that one that has gotten everybody off guard. Apollo Crews, not surprised there, although people have mentioned him for a destined for a spot with a Hurt Syndicate. I like that. Apollo Crews was always deserving of something better than what WWE gave him. He has size. He has a great look. He has athleticism. I think he can do some good things. And I think AEW should pair him up with the Hurt Syndicate. And I think that would be a devastating trio. But then again, Hurt Syndicate looked awesome. And AEW went out of its way, i.e. Tony Khan, to derail that. So yeah, that's in and of a nutshell, it is on there. Santos Escobar, he was cut after signing a big deal because he was thinking about leaning towards CMLL. Well, he can go back to CMLL now as far as that's concerned, because that's where he could be heading, or AEW. But it's interesting. They signed him to keep him away from CMLL. Then they realized maybe they spent too much on him and then decided to cut him after.
Can I ask, was he injured? Because I thought maybe he was injured.
I think he was injured, but he is going to be okay within the 90-day period, okay. A no-compete okay. period. I think that's what they determined, is that he would be good to go in the 90-day period. Zoe Stark was already cleared for WWE, mm-hmm. according to reports.
Okay. Yeah, Santos Escobar, I think he did really, really well when they brought him up the first time for the LWO. Did a real good job with it. I liked him better as a babyface than a heel. Mm-hmm. I just didn't really buy his heel act. Well, you know, if he's got, you know, connections in CMLL, I mean, they are the hottest wrestling company in the world, but definitely
I think you could say right now they are. Could say right now that they are. I want to, you know, I don't want to say that the number one, because number one still is WWE. AEW probably could still generate a large contingent themselves, but CMLL is right there with them. And the fact that it sells out 15,000 to 16,000 people arenas each and every week should not go without saying. And again, Santos Escobar, I could see him doing really well back in Mexico for Lucha Libre, and also doing some stuff in Japan as well. Let's run this through real quick. Aleister Black and Zelina Vega, who are married in real life, they were let go. I'm not too surprised there. Zelina's just so small. The size issue, I just think it's hard for her to have good, really good matchups sometimes. I saw her with Lacey Evans one time, and I commented to you on this on the air. I just thought it was just the size difference. It's just really hard. But I know she's devastated by it. And Aleister Black, he has a great look, but it just never seems to go anywhere with the mysterious House of Black from AEW and all that stuff, similar to what he was doing in WWE. It just never seems to go anywhere. I know that he was rumored to be the voice before Pat McAfee, and that still would have done nothing for me, but obviously would have kept both of them employed, and unfortunately did not work out. But the one thing I want to go ahead that's trending worldwide is Kairi Sane, who is in the middle of a storyline. let me repeat that. In the middle of a storyline with Asuka and Io Sky looking more and more like she was going to turn on Asuka when they would have their match, was supposed to be at WrestleMania, didn't work out at WrestleMania. Now it's at Backlash. Your thoughts on Kairi Sane and the backlash, quite literally, because she has now been trending worldwide and a lot of people are angry, including me, that she is gone. She's the only one I would have said that you could have done a lot more with.
I was shocked by that one. That was the one that really shocked me because, again, as you mentioned, mid-storyline, they hadn't wrapped this up. Yeah. And yeah. I agree. I think she had a lot of potential, still has a lot of potential. I would like to know, though, really, if I could have been a fly on the wall in the TKO boardroom when they were deciding on let's let Kairi go. I would like to know what the reasoning was, because to me, it just does, she was over. All right. Fans were digging the storyline, you know, of Asuka mistreating her. She's talented as all get out. All right. I really want to know what the deal is, what the true reason is for her dismissal, for her being released, because I just don't buy it that it just happened just to happen.
Michael Dodge says another great thing right here in the comments. Loved what Matt Cardona says. Being released isn't the end. It's a chance to reinvent yourself. I could see a lot of these performers really benefiting from being released. Yes, they should follow Matt Cody Rhodes' example. They should follow those examples, absolutely, Michael, and try to use this as a springboard to even greater success. And I'm wishing all of them, I know that there's already been a retirement amongst these wrestlers, but I do wish all of them continued success in whatever they wish to do. But before we end on out, my friend, we only have a few minutes left. I'm going to round off the names of who was brought up as far as the NXT call-ups, because when people are let go, that means that people are brought up from NXT. Sol Ruka, Ethan Page, Joe Henry, Fatal Influence, Ricky Saints, Blake Monroe. I know that there's talked about Jada Parker, Kalani Jordan, JC Jane, Kendall Gray, Ren St. Clair, Lola Vice, names like that have also been talked about. Thea Hall, Zariah. But the names right there, Blake Monroe, Ricky Saints, Fatal Influence, Joe Henry, Ethan Page, and Sol Ruka. Which of those wrestlers do you think has a chance to break through and be a top performer 1 year from now? Not right now, because all of them are going to get some fire underneath them. But 1 year from now, which ones are we still talking about?
I'm going to pick two. I'm going to pick for the ladies. I think we're going to talk about Blake Monroe. I think she's...
Question, though, with Blake Monroe. Is she too much like Tiffany Stratton? I would have told you that Blake Monroe, a.k.a. Mariah Mary and AEW, is tremendous talent. But is she too similar in what Tiffany Stratton brings you?
Well, she is, because she's got that striking look that is very similar to Tiffany Stratton.
Yes.
Blonde, yes. Maybe they do something different with her. I could see a quick dye job of the hair, maybe. You know, that could maybe give enough separation. I can see exactly where you're coming from, though, that there is that little bit of lap over, if you will. As for the men, I'm going to go out on a limb. I think Ricky Saints. I think we're talking about him a year from now.
I don't think any of them outside of Sol Ruka might be considered in that realm. Fatal Influence is getting a lot of heat right now because as their unit, as long as they stay unit, I think that's good, but I just don't think that any of them separately has enough charisma. It's either all or one with Fatal Influence. Sol Ruka, I think of them, I think could be the one that gets over. Ricky Saints, it's just something missing with him, because he's got some elements, but I just think there's still something missing for him to be a top guy in this business. I just don't see him as a top guy telling a story that the majority of people in the WWE want to hear. Joe Henry, I don't believe in Joe Henry anymore. I think that believe in Joe Henry thing has gone by the wayside. And also as well, I think he's just going to be a mid-card act at this point. And also as well, I just think Blake Monroe, I think is just too much like which is she's going to need a makeover to get away from Tiffany Stratton. Ethan Page, just size-wise and what he brings, he's just not as good as you want to make him on the mic, no matter how arrogant he's going to be. So I don't know. Again, none of these NXT call-ups are giving me pause. I think Obafemi was the NXT call-up that I really think has got a future star written in him as far as recent whatnot. And then Bron Breakker, you know, then it goes back from there. But yeah, none of these recent call-ups, I think, were over what I would do for Kairi Sane. I think all of them are going to get pushed, but I think a year from now, they're all going to be there, just there.
Yeah, and I mean, we also forgot about Trick Williams, who recent call-up as well, who's done very, very well.
Well, that's again, those the ones they had money on, they already brought up.
Yeah.
The ones that they know is the future, for sure. Once they brought up already, they were smart in that. Javon Evans, those individuals that they brought up already are the ones that they already got ideas on. Mm-hmm. So all right, that's it for us at the State of Pro Wrestling. John, what you working on with the PVD cast before we head on out?
What am I working on for the PVD cast? Well, I'm working on, of course, lining up some great guests as. We're kind of, you know how it is. Sometimes you get that little bit of that dead spot there before you get somebody scheduled. So that's where I'm at right now, being 100% open and honest. But got a lot of great shows, as I just mentioned earlier on. Ringside Rand is a good friend of mine. He sits down with me over the last two episodes to talk all about WrestleMania, what we thought about the show, what we liked about it, what we didn't like about it. We talk about those darn commercials. We certainly do. So that's available at pvdcast.com or wherever you find great podcasts. My partner Jason Taylor and I just dropped a new episode of Matt Talk this Sunday morning. We have changed our dates. We are no longer doing Sunday evenings. We're doing Sunday mornings. It seems to have helped out with the ratings, and I think it's just a better fit for our show. So we're coming up with that. We just dropped a new episode called The Competition recently, and real quickly, I want to say, Gerald, Michael Dodge, Mikey, thanks for checking out the show, man. I appreciate it. He's a good guy. I know him personally. So
absolutely. Great to have you watching. For everyone out there, appreciate you watching and listening. But I'm just checking my table. So for next month, I might bring in a Slim Jim table. How about that?
Okay. That's good.
I know they're not good to Sol Ruka because she slammed her head on one. If you saw that spot.
Where she
got pushed off. Yes. One broke, and then the one right behind. Why do you stack them together? Why? When somebody's falling, they're just going to end up. The way it was angled, just absolutely. Okay. No wonder she cut her head on that other table. Yeah, absolutely. But as Michael Dodge says, you are cursed. Well, hopefully you're not cursed. I want you guys to be around to not be cursed. So hopefully you'll be around to catch us on the next State of Pro Wrestling. But for John Orlando from the PVD cast, and also as well from Matt Talk, it's me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks again for watching this thing. Please like and subscribe and make sure you're part of what we're doing each and every month. When we stop on by, when we get back into the ring, when we pay more human dollars right here on the State of Pro Wrestling. From the PVD cast and the pop culture cosmos. Ding, ding, ding!
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Gerald Glassford, talking about all the news from the past couple of weeks here in the world of professional wrestling. And I hope you enjoyed our episode, and I hope you enjoyed our thoughts and comments and opinions on some of these topics. So maybe you want to get in touch with me so you can let me know what you think. Well, there's a couple different avenues for getting in touch with me. First off, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Just look for @PVDcast. You can shoot me an email if you like, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. And I'm still on Twitter. under my personal Twitter handle of @PVDMVP. Now, maybe you also want to let some folks know about where they can hear the show. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that as well. First, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly and probably the best place to get every single new episode. It's also available through all of your major podcasting outlets and apps. All you have to do is go to the search bar in your favorite outlet or app, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And by the way, if you're listening through one of those outlets or apps, please let them know that you love the show by giving a rating and a review. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm. And while you're at it, go ahead and subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. There's another way that you can hear the show, and that is through the Facebook page, @PVDcast, where on every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I do a live broadcast of the week's episode. So there's three easy ways to hear the show: PVDcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet or app, or through the Facebook page on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you very much for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2026.